Welcome, everyone, to this month's episode of Beyond the Stethoscope. I'm so excited today to introduce you to our panel of guests. We have Nicole from the Mundell Funeral Home in Orillia, Susan from Bereavement Ontario Network, and our own Louise, who's the Bereavement Services Coordinator at the North Simcoe Muskoka Hospice Palliative Care Network and Hospice Orillia, and Daniela Accomando, Visiting Hospice Coordinator and Social Worker at Hospice Orillia. Welcome, everyone. So to begin, I'd like each of you to introduce yourselves and to note that we're going to be focusing on grief and bereavement through COVID-19. So Nicole, could you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thanks, Linda, and thanks for including me in today's podcast. I come representing the Mundell Funeral Home, where I have served the bereaved community of the Orillia and surrounding communities as a funeral director for the last 18 years. It's truly a blessing to be able to serve my hometown community in this capacity.
Thank you, Nicole. And now we have Susan. Susan, welcome, and could you please introduce yourself?
I certainly can. Thank you, Linda, and thank you, team, for asking me to participate this morning. I really appreciate that. I wear several hats. I'm in private practice, where I dedicate myself to traumatic grief and bereavement, providing one-on-one counseling, group work, workshops, consulting. I have taught at the University of Western Ontario, Humber, Guelph, Ryerson, and the Toronto Police College. And do enjoy what I'm doing, because I've been doing that in various aspects for the last 46 years. In case you're wondering, I started when I was 3.
Welcome, Susan. Louise, could you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do?
Hi, Linda. Hi, Susan, Daniela, and Nicole. It's a pleasure to be here today. I'm the bereavement coordinator with Hospice Orillia and the Palliative Care Network. So I manage the team of volunteers at Hospice Orillia and coordinate the programs there. And then for the Palliative Care Network, I work alongside some of the nurse consultants delivering some of the projects that we do. So nice to be here. Thank you.
Yes. Welcome, Louise. Daniela, could you please do the same?
Sure. I'm very honored to be able to sit here virtually with this lovely group and have a really important conversation. So I'm Daniela. I'm the Visiting Hospice Coordinator and Social Worker at Hospice Orillia, in place while Stephanie Collins is on her mat leave, raising her beautiful new baby. So I've been a familiar face to hospice for the last year or so. I started by completing my bachelor's practicum in the visiting side of things, and then caught the hospice bug and came back for my master's placement on the bereavement side of things. And it felt like a little bit of a full circle moment for me. When I was about 9 or 10, I volunteered with a charity with my mom that actually supported children facing life-limiting illness. So since then, my world was forever changed. So I'm really honored to be able to serve the community of Orillia and surrounding areas in a similar way.
Welcome, Daniela. That's a little interesting fact that we didn't know about you.
Learn something new every day.
Yes. So you mentioned that you're involved with the Visiting Volunteer Program at Hospice Orillia. Can you share a bit about that program with us?
Sure. So Hospice Orillia is a program of the North Simcoe Muskoka Hospice Palliative Care Network. So our goal is to offer practical, emotional, and spiritual support to those in our community who are facing or living with advanced illness, death, or bereavement. So I work closely with Louise to do so. So the Visiting Hospice Program is just kind of like 4 different avenues to it. So the first one, as the name suggests, is a visiting volunteer program. So our volunteers go through a minimum of 30 hours of training to provide emotional and social support to clients. So we would match them, anyone who's maybe facing some isolation or who's just really lacking in their social networks. So we match a volunteer with them, and they can do anything from playing games to going for a walk. We've had people just sit and read to their clients. So really it's just offering them a companion at a really challenging time. And it kind of also acts as a dual purpose, because a lot of times that would give the opportunity to the caregiver to step out for just a moment. So whether that means they can have an extra hour or so in their day to run some errands or to take a nap or, you know, whatever they need that they wouldn't be able to do, you know, in their day-to-day responsibilities. So that's the visiting volunteer program. We also offer complementary therapy. So right now, ours has two streams. So it's Reiki, which is a Japanese form of energy cleansing or energy clearing, and massage therapy. So we have a registered massage therapist who donates her time and talent to support our community. So it could be for the individual facing a life-limiting illness, or their family members, their friends, their caregivers, whoever is part of their circle. We also offer supportive counseling. So I'm a registered social worker. And it's really just helpful for some people who either feel like they can't share what they would like to with other people in their circle, or, you know, some people just really want to talk to somebody who's not in their circle and that doesn't really know what's going on, and they can really just share their experience, their concerns, the great things that are happening, you know, whatever they feel like sharing. And then I would say our most popular one is our Footprints Project. So the idea behind the Footprints Project is to engage clients in legacy work. So as a way of honoring their life and reviewing their life, and also being able to leave something behind. So those volunteers that I mentioned work with the client and their families to create essentially a story about their life. So they ask questions about, you know, it could be anything from travel memories, or if they have children that they'd like to speak about, great things that have happened, really tragic things that have happened, whatever their story entails gets shared. And then we create that into, like I said, a book with some photos, and they can pass that along to their loved one. So, and also that program offers scrapbooking. So some folks have, you know, boxes and boxes of photos that they've never had a chance to go through. So a volunteer can sit with them and create a scrapbook, or some folks also take the letter and card writing option. So whether it's just too difficult to write letters, or physically they're not able to write, or they just don't know exactly what words to share, a volunteer will sit with them and guide them through that as well. So got a lot of different services to service as many people as we can.
Yes, that's some fantastic work that you're doing there, Daniela, with the volunteers. And it sounds like that you rely on them heavily for the work that they do to help you provide those services.
Oh, absolutely. We literally could not do what we do without our volunteers. And I would say they're the backbone of our organization. They've been fantastic through COVID to be flexible and adaptable and to really, to do all of this so that they can service their community. So yes, volunteers are everything to us, and we appreciate them very much. And they really touch the lives of so many people in our community.
Yes, thank you to the volunteers. So Louise, can you tell us a bit more about the bereavement program that you run at Hospice Aurelia?
Yes, I can do. Thank you, Linda. And to echo what Daniela said, we would come to a grinding halt if we didn't have the volunteers. So the bereavement program is mostly delivered by volunteers in the form of peer support. So we offer your traditional 8-week closed support groups. We offer one-on-one supports. We offer some specialized groups, pregnancy and infant loss group, overdose loss related groups. We have some pilot projects that offer grief supports for individuals with developmental disabilities and incarcerated individuals. So they've mostly switched to virtual where they can. Some of the projects are just kind of on hold, and, you know, being assessed in the new year. Our volunteers had to learn really quickly how to embrace the technology associated with the online delivery of these programs. and they did an amazing job. They needed to be really flexible and have a really good sense of humor as we navigated like tech issues. And we would always joke that the beginning of the meeting for the first 10 minutes would be looking at the back of somebody's hand or the wrong way on the camera. So that's just kind of part of the course now. Another big part of the bereavement program are the biannual memorial events. So we had to get really creative and pull together as a team to be able to make these possible. And I think one of the silver linings of this is that these events in particular are now more accessible and inclusive for other community partners than they would have been in person. The bereavement and psychosocial community as a whole really came together. Susan from Bereavement Ontario Network offered weekly fireside chats to enable us to come together and troubleshoot and connect in those early days. And it really was like a post we could tether to each week and attending those meetings. So thank you, Susan, for that. And this also led to our collaboration with BON, Bereavement Ontario Network, to be able to deliver a virtual COVID-19 loss support group.
Thank you, Louise. So Susan, I'm going to turn to you now. So Louise has mentioned that there is some sort of collaboration happening with Bereavement Ontario Network. Could you please tell us a little bit about that and also some of the other things that you do and the work that you do around grief and bereavement?
All right. Thank you. I will. Over the fireside chats, when we would have people come together, one of the areas that we identified was that there were no COVID-19 bereavement support groups. They were not to be found. And people who had attempted to go to a general bereavement support group were just finding it wasn't working. It just didn't seem to fit. And the big difference is in COVID-19 bereavement, you're dealing with traumatic grief. So not only is the individual coming in with having to deal with their grief, but they're also moving through their trauma. And that's one reason that we usually suggest that people wait 6, 9, or 12 months out of their loss, because during that time, they're actually, the number one thing is the trauma that they're dealing with. And they're still in a state of shock about it. So it's after that period of time. And in some circumstances, we'll look at people, we won't shun people if they're not within that 6, 9, or 12 month out period. And it is a closed group that we have. There was a curriculum that was specifically designed to deal with traumatic grief. It was pretty close to, I have had delivered homicide bereavement support groups. So it is pretty close to that because once again, homicide, traumatic grief is what people are dealing with. So we put together a curriculum that is 6 weeks in duration. And after the 6 weeks completion, 1 month later, we do a follow-up because it was found that a lot of people said, you know, oh my goodness, the 6 weeks, this is it. That was like a tethering to looking forward to reconnecting again, having that it wasn't finalized after the 6 weeks. The reason 6 weeks is because it is so intense that is really the most people can deal with. If you're telling them we're going to be doing this for 2 months or more, it's kind of, wow, that's overwhelming. So 6 weeks, we have two co-facilitators. At least one has to be comfortable and has worked in the area of traumatic grief support groups. Our first started last Wednesday, the 17th of November. We have a maximum of 10 people that we would allow in the group. The group is an hour and a half in duration once a week. And once again, an hour and a half because the intensity and also working through Zoom, about an hour and a half is everybody's energy level kind of bottoms out at that time. It worked very well, I must say. It was Louise and I who were co-facilitating that group. And this group is designed specifically for people who have lost anybody to COVID-19. So that's what it isn't simply that there's been a loss during the pandemic, but that they lost somebody to COVID. It could be a patient of theirs. It could be a co-worker. It could be a friend. It could be a family member. It could be anybody that you have that connection with. Currently, our program is directed to adults, but we have very tight links with organizations and networks that deal with children. So if we have any referrals that we need to make, so far we have not had anybody come forward asking for support for children in this area, but I know that it is only a matter of time. So the word has been put out across different networks, and we're hoping that people will come forward. I think that's about it. Linda, is there anything else that I mentioned to you previously that I forgot to mention here?
Maybe just a little bit about your work in your own private practice on grief and bereavement.
Okay, yeah. I do a one-on-one, and I used to have groups. The only groups that I'm now running are the COVID-19 groups virtually. All my work is done virtually, either by phone or through Zoom. It has really changed the dynamics because, there still is the idea that people would prefer to be gathering in person because that there's that energy exchange, there's that sense of truly being present with somebody as they're moving through their grief work. So it takes a little more with Zoom, but there's upsides to that. Both the telephone conversations, I don't like the telephone conversations as much because I can't see body language. I don't, when there's a pause, I'm not sure, is that pause because they're having a moment? They need that moment to take another breath. Is something happening and they're getting distracted? So body language is something I'm missing, which I appreciate Zoom for. But people are letting me know that for them, the upside to Zoom is they feel safe in their own home. This is their home environment. And they don't have to worry about, how do I get to the meeting, or how do I get to your place? If there's snowstorms, if there's any ability issues, whatever the matter is, they can connect with me. It's not quite the same as being in person, of course, but I have found that people have found it's very therapeutic. And one issue that keeps coming up is because of the pandemic, because of all that's gone on, is the trust issue. We know that when we're dealing with bereaved, there is always the trust issue because it's a very personal, intimate relationship. You're doing your grief work, you're doing your trauma work. That's the most intimate and hardest work you do in your lifetime. So the trust is a big factor. And so really focusing on that and letting people know that that is an issue, and it makes sense that that would be a concern for them. So it's been a learning curve, I think, for everybody. But I really feel that this will be part of the future, will be virtual. There'll be some hybrid models that will come along. But I know, for instance, I lost my brother to COVID-19 this past year. And there were people who were not able to, of course, be at the funeral because it was limited to 10 people. And some people were in other parts of the world. So they were able to live stream it. And so, that was accommodating people that for one reason or another could not be there. So I think that, there were 10 of us who were at the gravesite, but the others were able to participate, which was really great because people said they felt that they really were there, that they participated, and so it made a world of difference to many people. So I think that's where we're going. And I truly would never have thought, if you would have asked me 2 years ago, would we be doing this, virtual, I'd say, well, we might be getting into it a bit because Bereavement Ontario Network had spoken about the need for something virtual that kept us, because we would have our annual conference in October up at Geneva Park, up Orillia Way. And it would be just a delight to be up there and connect with each other, but there needed to be something to keep us connected throughout the year. And these virtual fireside chats that Louise spoke about have been just vital for keeping us connected and have really made a difference in the network. So, yeah.
Oh, thank you so much, Susan. I'm so happy to hear about all that great work and the collaboration that Bonn is now doing with the network as well as Hospice Aurelia. That's fantastic. So Nicole, now I'm gonna ask you, could you please tell us all how your work has been impacted by COVID-19? That would be my first question. And then could you follow up with how do you see the future?
For sure. I'm just going to start by saying that all funeral homes and cemeteries are regulated by the Bremen Authority of Ontario. So that's our governing body. And with collaboration, of course, with public health and our provincial government, in the last 20 months or so, we've seen capacity limits, like Susan said earlier, from 10 people to 50 people. Mandates that your entrance had to be of difference from your exits, that you couldn't have lineups, you couldn't have cycling of guests, you couldn't have overlap of families within your home at one time. At one point, I don't even know if people realize, but there was a point in time where we, the funeral professionals, could not even go into hospitals or nursing homes. We had time frame mandates that you couldn't delay services. We were doing arrangements, some arranging over Zoom. We were doing reserved seating. We still are in some cases doing reserved seating. And then also, like Susan touched upon, we'd be lost without technology and the live streaming that has allowed so much flexibility and collaboration into bringing families and friends and community together. So I don't see that going anywhere anytime soon. And I mentioned earlier, but we the Mundell Funeral Home were, I'm going to be very transparent here, a little lagged in our technology world, which sometimes we work really well under pressure. So I'm happy to say we've come from a little webcam to a secured platform for live streaming, which has allowed us to do that both on site and a mobile aspect of that as well at cemeteries, because we definitely were seeing increased outdoor services or celebrations of life, increased private services where it was by invitation, more like I hate to compare funerals to weddings, but there is sometimes that overlap. So we were seeing that more so than ever by invite only. So we've seen a lot in the last 20 months, just like everyone has, but not being able to go into a hospital, I've never encountered that before. So I'm happy to say we are out of that phase. Currently, we, the Mundell Funeral Home, we've chosen to operate because we can, due to the mandates by the BAO, on a personalized family basis, meaning that family C can request that all attendees show proof of vaccination, which waives the physical distancing and capacity measures. But where family D can host services without the mandates or proof of vaccination, but then we have physical distancing and capacity measures in effect, where we bring in the reserved seating aspect of that. But there's two points that remain consistent no matter what style of mandate the families wish to use, that contract tracing right from the get-go has been mandatory and still is. And of course, all indoor services everyone must be wearing a mask. So, and I don't see that going anywhere anytime soon. And I guess as far as the biggest impact on what the families have had to go through in the last 20 months, from my perspective, is they're struggling on how to honor their loved one's life. Yet they're taking on the responsibility of keeping everyone healthy at the same time. So just that fine line, and just the increased alienation at a time when we need not only family, but we need community. And I think we've mentioned too, but just the loss benefit, or just being comfortable with an old fashioned hug I think that's the three struggles that I see from our family's perspective in the last 20 months.
Must be so difficult.
It's been a challenge for sure.
So Louise, could you answer those same questions for us? How has your work been impacted by COVID-19? That's the first question. And the second is, how do you see your future at work?
Well, really echoing some of the themes that Nicole said and Susan spoke to as well, doing intakes over the phone isn't ideal because we can't read the body language as easily. So we can do a video chat option if people wish to do that. So with reference to the sort of the future piece, I think that might be around forever, just, you know, because we could take advantage of that during snow days. Over the last 20 months, some of the themes I've seen around the intake specifically are that isolation piece. And we ask the question, have you been able to have a funeral or a celebration of life or a memorial? And there's so many no's, like there's so many not yet, it's been delayed, or I'd really like to, but we just want to wait till everyone can be together again. So we think that's having an effect on people, right? Not having that closure piece, if that's the right word for it. So the isolation of not having friends and neighbors, especially during the actual lockdowns, right, when we weren't allowed to really go outside of our own households, people found that really hard. There was no food being delivered to people. There was no, you know, people just coming over just to keep somebody company. So, and just to sort of backtrack a little bit, the other theme that kept coming up, which was heartbreaking during the actual intakes, was sometimes the last time they saw their person was when they said goodbye to them in the ambulance. Then they didn't get access to their person again. So I can't even imagine how hard that would be for people. And then depending on the setting and depending on the rules and what level of lockdown we were in, some people got to be with their people for just a few hours maybe. And if the death wasn't necessarily a COVID death, it was, you know, another illness that kind of came out of the blue for people. If death wasn't really a sort of suspected outcome, people didn't know, right? That family members didn't know that they should be spending time with their loved ones, right? So they're kind of frustrated that this pandemic is going on and they had all those sort of like wasted opportunities. So the ripple effect of the pandemic on people end of life and people who are ill in hospital and not being with their relatives, like that's, we're seeing those people come now for intakes and they're frustrated and they're angry and they need to talk about it. So another part that has been tricky, and I think it's because we're in sort of survival mode, I feel like we have shifted a little bit out of survival mode in the last few months. But another challenging thing has been trying to make those matches, the volunteer and client matches, right, just to get people to commit. So, and it's usually the clients who we can't get to commit, like the volunteers are ready and willing. And then we, you know, we sort of like put the work in and make the match. And then for whatever reason, I think because people have so many other things going on, it isn't necessarily the priority that they thought it would be to them. So, so it's been challenging. We've seen a lot of themes around, like I say, the isolation and that lack of connection. And for the future, we'll just keep delivering a virtual format for groups. One-on-ones can happen in person, physically distanced, if both parties are comfortable. But our volunteers are, you know, some of them are in a vulnerable position themselves. So like we spoke about earlier, we can't afford to lose our volunteers, and nor would we want to. Like, our main priority is to keep them safe. So groups are paused for now, and they're doing amazing. They are doing absolutely amazing delivering them on a Zoom platform. So yeah, that's how it's been for the last 20 months.
great. Thanks, Louise, for answering those questions. And Daniela, same questions for you. How has COVID-19 affected your practice and your work? And what do you see for the future?
Yeah, so similar to, I think, most of what's shared, I find that, I say this, but as kind of a joke, but it's not really a joke. COVID has removed like a lot of, you know, just being a human being and, you know, that sharing of energy and space and being with one another and feeling that support in person has been really lacking. And so I'm finding that there's an increase of, you know, just referrals. Like people need services, people need more hands, they just need that connection piece. And I'm noticing that a shift from what used to be our footprint project that used to bring people in the door. A lot of people now are requesting those visiting services or social work support so they can really have that social piece that's been lacking. And then like just logistically speaking, in terms of how we operate, as everyone has said, you know, we've shifted to virtual platforms, but everything changes from minute to minute, day to day. So it's been really frustrating at times for clients and volunteers when, you know, we've done the virtual piece. We finally said, hey, we're ready to go back in person. We get it going. And then 2 weeks later, we're in a lockdown. So it's frustrating. It's upsetting. It's, you know, it's just another thing that keeps changing. It's harder to kind of operate. But I think moving forward, what everyone's highlighted is that this virtual platform is going to continue on, because it's just, for some people, it's so helpful, that increased accessibility, like Susan was mentioning. And I do most of my counseling clients actually over the phone, because, right, Susan, like you said, it's just so much easier. You don't have to coordinate rides or, you know, if you're gone for a certain period of time, to make sure that you've got all your medication handled or oxygen and, you know, all the things that go along with an advanced illness that you just don't have to worry about. You can be in your home somewhere where you're safe and comfortable, grab a coffee, and in 2 seconds you can pick up the phone and you've got someone there to support you. So I think moving forward, we're just going to keep learning and doing the best that we can and adapting the virtual platforms to be as fulfilling as possible, and where it's safe and people are comfortable to do so, to include those in-person pieces as well.
That's great. Thanks, Daniela. There, you certainly have shown that there are certainly pros and cons to the Zoom platform. So I have 2 more questions that I'm going to ask each of you. And Susan, I'm going to start with you. So these are the 2 questions. We've spoken a lot about how COVID-19 has impacted our community, but as healthcare professionals, we are part of the community. How has COVID affected you as a healthcare professional? That is the first question. And the second question is, what are some of the coping tools that you would recommend?
All right. Well, I know personally, I had a private practice for several years, and I've worked out of my home. However, things have really changed because I've had to change the format, so not seeing people one-on-one. I have found that with all the changes in the world, that I've been running on empty. So the big thing was, even though I had in the past, before COVID, had a kind of a routine with my private practice at home and how I would balance that with my life, it seemed to get knocked out of whack. My routine was gone because our routine in everyday life was changed for everybody. So I did not realize the impact until time went on, and I was finding I was getting more tired, more exhausted. You know, somebody mentioned that I was becoming a Zoomaholic, because that was the way you connected with everybody, but it was also very draining. So what I found that I had to do for my mental health and well-being, because, you know, I was, you know, as I chatted with several people, we were finding that we were doing unhealthy behavior to try to manage. You know, you were stressed out from the overload of stuff. So you found ways to chill out. You found ways to comfort yourself. The ways were, you know, a little too much snackies or foods, irregular eating, cut down on the walk-in or the exercising because you were tired. And yes, of course, that lovely glass of red wine too, so that you could, you know, get to sleep. And then one glass to two glass to, wow, that bottle seems to evaporate quickly. Looking at unhealthy coping mechanisms. And, you know, and then I was, as the chair of Breathe in Ontario Network, when we would have our fireside chats, I would be preaching that about self-care. So I realized that I got to practice what I preach, because if you don't, it comes back to bite you big time. So then I had to find ways, you know, reached out to my immediate support people and said, please let me know when you think I'm going off the rails again by doing too many things, having too much on my plate. I had to move from a plate to a platter because the plate wasn't enough. And so what I found is I had to do a schedule for myself. I love making lists. That's, you know, I think part of my life legacy will be when they come to celebrate my life, everybody will get the post-it notes so that they can put that in a list. But on my list, I daily now put in a slot where it is, number one, I make sure that I eat healthy meals, you know, because it was getting a little bit, I didn't have time and I didn't have energy to be cooking for myself or looking. So it was like, you know, the local restaurants were very happy with me, but my body wasn't quite as happy. So watching what I was eating, you know, remembering, you know, what my mother would say to me, you know, Susan, you need to drink plenty of water. And it's really true. I would forget about that. But as you see, I've got my water bottle there. And also scheduling things like go for a walk and put it in my schedule and do it. Also, if I have a day where I'm really whacked and that walk doesn't seem to be the answer, maybe a nap. Because I'll say to my clients often, you know what? Listen to what your body is saying. And that's what I've been doing. The body says, you know what? I'm hungry. Eat. I'm tired. Chill out. Have a nap, you know? I've been doing very well at getting those little afternoon power naps in. So it's been really, really helpful. But I really found that I had to do that. You know, and I mean, and then as I'm doing my private practice, working with Breathe in Ontario Network, life also happens. In my case, my mom died in February, my brother died in April. You know, with my mom, at least I got to see her for 2 days before she died in hospital because they declared her palliative. Before that, no visitors, none. When they declared her palliative, I was able to go and be with her. So that for me was you know, a blessing. But with like my brother, it was all done virtually. And at the end, of course, I did not want to see the virtual. So I asked because he was hooked up to a ventilator, not something that is, you know, the way you want to remember somebody. As the universe would provide, and I think it's so that I could be more empathetic with people, there was an error and I got to see him on the ventilator, which there was Susan kind of shouting, could you turn off the video part? Because at least I was able to connect with him and talk to him at the end. I'm have a sense that that was helpful to him because we know that at the end people can still hear. And it was also really beneficial for me. But I think one thing that I also have to keep in mind and that we all should, that whether somebody dies with COVID-19, during the pandemic time, because of all the things we've talked about, lack of ritual, isolation, lack of community, no contact with your loved one, you're not holding their hand when they die, a variety of things like this. As somebody said, when they leave in the ambulance, that's the last time you see them alive. So with all those things, with the COVID-19 pandemic times, that is putting everybody who is bereaved during these times will have a predisposition to experiencing complicated grief. So what we would call, you know, what we would say, well, somebody, you know, they died with, you know, whether it be cancer or heart or, and so it was a more natural process. However, you now have added in all the complexities of COVID, the pandemic, and it really knocks it out of whack. So we're going to be seeing a lot more people who are now dealing with complicated grief as well. Also, we need to realize what we're seeing and witnessing in these people, okay? The trauma, the complicated grief, the stories that are really heart-wrenching. So how does that play out on us? So we really have to do self-care. If we don't do self-care, we're not going to be there for others. And my opinion is, this isn't over now. This will be ongoing, and the long-term impact mentally, physically, psychologically on people, those of us working in the profession and those of us impacted, we'll see it long way down the road. So that's why we need to, I try not to say self-care. I try to say, give suggestions, because people are like, I've had people, and some of them are practitioners, other counselors, who say, I'm really sick of people telling me self-care. I don't have the energy for self-care. And I say, I know what you mean. So you got to find ways to, even if you do it little snippets, my one big thing is, do 1 minute of meditation a day, and it will be helpful. Of course, at that point, they all think I'm a little crazy, which it's true. I am a little crazy. That's why I'm still in this work after umpteen years. But I truly have them, I'll run through a 1 minute meditation with them. And it's just breath work, and it makes a difference. So whatever you can do, because all of us, we're there. We will be serving our community for many years to come. And we can't do that without looking after ourselves.
Thanks for sharing all of that, Susan. First of all, on behalf of everyone, I'm passing along condolences for your losses. Very hard to go through all of that, plus do the work that you do every day. So sorry to hear about all of that.
Thank you. And I have to tell you, what the motivating factor, the number one for me to get on the bandwagon and put together the COVID-19 bereavement support groups was for my brother.
Well, that's a very nice legacy.
Thank you.
So Nicole, I'm going to give you the same two questions now, and I'll repeat those. How has COVID affected you as a healthcare professional, and what are some of the coping tools that you use?
For sure. So the onset of COVID, I would say, was more of a physical exhaustion. We were working long stretches in pairs, just so that we weren't overlapping as a team. Should COVID present itself, then we would still be able to serve our community. So that was the initial, and we've made changes that we feel confident here in the workplace that we can overlap. So we're not doing those extreme long stretches anymore. But there's definitely today too, the emotional, the mental exhaustion. We always feel that we're presenting barriers to families. We're presenting limitations left, right, and center, just trying to be compliant. And of course, there's importance to that, but that gets exhausting itself and mentally. And just having to come up with creativity is exhausting. We're more of an event planner, I think, today than ever. And I think I shared earlier that there was one family that we had to, the way to navigate that was three different services on that day with the time restraints in between each service, just so there's no overlap. So just thinking outside of the box is, and has led to that mental exhaustion. And I guess, what tools would I recommend? Is allowing forgiveness. I know it's some people say this sounds wishy-washy, but allowing yourself forgiveness for these feelings is important. It's okay to feel exhausted, but now to implement some of these tools. So a change of scenery is crucial. So that doesn't always mean, I mean, we can anyways, and we couldn't for the most part, doesn't always mean a trip to the Caribbean, but it does maybe mean going for a hike in a little community that you've never experienced before. And it doesn't always have to be associated to financial ties either, right? So just, I think it's getting out of our four walls sometimes is crucial. And Susan, like you said, our trust circle. So who that looks for each of us is so different, but that circle is so important, and just keeping in contact with that group. And I also think, I guess they can't see us, can they, but on this podcast, but disconnecting from the tech world. I know in management, it's not always easy, but those issues are going to be there in an hour from now. So it may not be a full 24 hours that we can disconnect, but at least taking an hour or so here and there to disconnect. And like I said, even when I started 20 years ago, way before COVID, but just that physical fitness element. And again, I'm not talking about running a marathon here. I'm talking about maybe half an hour walk. Just it's so crucial to mental health. So those are my practices.
Right. Thank you for sharing, Nicole. Some great advice in there. Louise, how about you? How has COVID affected you as a healthcare professional? And what are some self-care strategies that you use?
Well, I'd like to say, Linda, it's fine. It's just fine. It's all fine. It hasn't affected me in the least. But I'm not sure what universe operates on the multitasking that we do now. It's been bananas, right? I mean, where in the universe do we homeschool children and go to work ourselves and troubleshoot IT things with the homeschool children and with ourselves? And just, I think the rate we've had to sort of switch gears at, live with that constant fear. I think everyone's baseline of stress is a lot higher now, and we're kind of used to that at the moment. I don't think it's sustainable or healthy. So it's been a bit bananas, honestly, the last 20 months. I mean, I think the lockdowns were harder than it has been now, but I think now we're all moving around a little bit more with the, you know, with being vaccinated, but we still have that, you know, threat that we can still get sick. So what's helped me cope, and I think just sort of like adding on to what Nicole and Susan have said, has just been doing some exercise and getting outside, and like snacks, like bite-sized snacks of exercise, right? It doesn't have to be epic. I have dogs, so I don't have a choice. I have to go out for at least a 10-minute walk with them, and I do that several times a day. And it really helps just to step away from the screen and get some fresh air and oxygen. And it's funny, have a bird feeder, which I've never enjoyed so much my whole life, like during COVID. And the kids, they gave me a list of what I could call them upstairs for what was on the bird feeder. They're like, do not call us up to see another cardinal or a blue jay. Unless it's an owl or a turkey, we're not coming. It's just right. Not that fascinating anymore. So
or something we've never seen before.
Exactly. So yeah, a little bit of fresh air, a little bit of exercise keeps me somewhat sane.
Well, we see how difficult it is even for healthcare professionals in the field to actually do self-care. So it's we're always seeming to give that information and advice to other people, but also being aware that how hard it is to actually do it. Daniela, same questions for you. How have you been impacted in your work, and what are some of the coping tools that you use?
Yeah, well, like everyone said, it's affected every aspect of, you know, personal and professional life. You know, me right now, where I'm at, I'm a fresh social worker. So I've entered the field at a very atypical time. So, you know, learning the ropes of social work and the way things have gone, and then having to learn how it's running now with COVID. That's a huge adjustment. But I think what everyone has been really speaking to is kind of this intensity and these layers, complex layers that COVID has added to everything in every aspect of life. So I'm finding in particular, I'm not a self-care as a bubble bath kind of gal or a trip or I walks are great, but I'm finding for me, it's really important to honor the individuals that I'm serving because it is hard. So I do, at community rounds, we have a little, like, I guess you can call it a ceremony where we honor the lives of the individuals who have lost that we've served by lighting a candle and taking a moment of silence. And we've also got a string of beads that represents each individual. So we do things like that. I do something personally where every client that I've served, you can't see it here, but I'll show the folks who can see. I've got a little like dish that has wooden beads that I just put the individual's first initial. So like this one just has a J. So I can always remember the individuals that I've served. And I just take a moment to say something I really enjoyed about working with that person before I put it in this little jar. So I find that's really helpful for me. My stepsister and I so we live together. So we do something called a W of the day. So we have a little jar with little slips of paper that we sit. And at the end of the day, when we're just having dinner and chatting about our day and what happened, we just take a minute to reflect on something great that happened or a great conversation we had or just a great memory so that we can add it there. And then if we ever are having a rough day, we can kind of go back and look at it and think of all the things we should be grateful for in our life. But yeah, anything that helps me either reset, recharge, or refocus that doesn't feel like a chore. And for me, that looks like honoring the individuals that we service. So yeah, those are my tips, I guess.
Thanks so much, Daniela. You mentioned before that you're younger and that you're just starting your career. You're doing a fantastic job and you'll have a great future.
Thank you.
So we're nearing the end of our time together. I have one more question that I'm going to open up to the group. Do you have any recommendations for things that clients or perhaps healthcare professionals can reference that they could use if they're struggling through this time? Is there a website? Is there a book? Is there special group? Obviously, they can go to our websites, the North Simcoe Muskoka Hospice Palliative Care Network or Hospice Aurelia Bereavement Ontario Network. And hopefully they don't have to look up Nicole too often. But obviously she has had some great information too and a great collaborative partner. So just maybe some suggestions where to go.
Susan talking.
Okay, Susan.
Yeah. One great resource is the Canadian Grief Alliance, and they have such a variety of things, and they are really good. They're keeping on top of what's going on, so they have a lot of resources right across the board. So I find them excellent, and of course, you've already mentioned the Bereavement Ontario Network resource as well. And yeah, and one resource that I would suggest that you tell your clients or colleagues not to go to is the news. I've been advising my clients, and I'm practicing what I'm preaching, that I'm not listening to the news as much as I was at all, because it can really spin you down. So, yeah.
Right. Very negative energy.
Yeah. Thanks, Linda.
Louise, I think you were going to mention something. I saw you.
Yeah, I think a book and a podcast, which I stumbled across. Danielle is nodding, so I don't know if she was going to say the same thing, but it's a book named Burnout, Burnout, Burnout. And if you don't want to read the book, if you just want to listen to the podcast, it's Brené Brown interviewing Amelia and Emily Nagoski. And in a nutshell, it talks about how you need to complete that stress cycle. So just because the stressor has been removed, right, it doesn't mean that the stress like miraculously just leaves your body. So there's tips on how to do that. I mean, in a nutshell, it's laughing, it's crying, it's going for a walk, it's just releasing that energy that needs to come out. So, or maybe you release it in a creative way. So I think I've recommended that for lots of clients over the last 18 months and colleagues, and everybody seems to really enjoy it and it seems to make sense.
Okay, thank you. Yes, everyone loves Brené Brown, so I'm sure that's very interesting. Daniela, did you have anything else that you wanted to add?
No, I was nodding because Louise shared. I'm really happy that you did share that because I think that you're right. It is a great resource for folks. And I listened to it and just hearing it from their mouth was hilarious. I loved it. Yeah, I don't have anything else to add. I think those were great. Thank you for the opportunity though.
Nicole, did you have anything that you wanted to add?
Dr. Alan Wolfelt, he's an educator and grief counselor for North America. And he recently did a segment too for those in the workplace of bereavement services. So he's a great communicator, both for our community and for ourselves.
Okay, great, thank you. So I just want to thank you ladies for joining me today. That was an absolutely phenomenal information sharing session. You are fantastic at what you do. Thank you so much for contributing to our community and make sure that you keep care of yourselves as we go along because we need you. So thank you everyone and have a nice day.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.